This is the No More Wasted Days podcast, and we're your hosts, Sarah Kaufman Bradstreet
and Heather Peachy. Grab your favorite NA drink and listen as we share vulnerable stories so you never feel alone on your alcohol-free journey.
And gain insights from us as we break down our most used tips and strategies that have kept us alcohol-free.
It's time to break free from wasting any more of your days to the drinking, blackout, hangover cycle.
Welcome to another episode of the No More Wasted Days podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Sarah.
And I'm Heather.
And we are excited to talk to you today about the label of being an alcoholic and diving into the idea that you don't need to be defined by any terms. And we're going to give you some other terminology to think of when it comes to drinking, over drinking, any of that. So you can really find the term that defines you and also understand that it is okay to switch terms at any time or not even have a definition or a term that you use to label yourself. Before we dive into that, we're going to reintroduce ourselves for you guys because we know we've got a lot of new listeners. And if you're just listening for the first time, we want you to know who we are. So Heather, why don't you take it away?
Yeah. So my name is Heather. I have been a social worker for over 20 years. I'm a certified life coach. I will be 3 years alcohol-free tomorrow. And I am a toddler mama, a breast cancer survivor, and I wear a lot of other hats.
Yes, you do. And you're the co-host for me.
Oh, yeah, that too.
And she's just a baddie. I woke up this morning to notes being all the blanks filled in, and I was so excited about it. So I appreciate you so much.
Oh, thank you.
And I'm Sarah. I'm the founder of No More Wasted Days. I started this little business about 4 years ago. I'm 5 years alcohol-free in May. So getting very close to kind of a milestone that I never could have imagined. Before I did this, I was actually an elementary music teacher in the public schools, and I taught middle school choir for some of that time too. I did that for 18 years. And when COVID happened, I kind of knew it was my time to walk away because I knew my husband and I were going to take on this crazy adventure where we're building our own house. And we've been doing that for the past 3 years. We are the builders. When I say we're building a house, we walk into a build site every day that I record my podcast in. Heather gets to watch the mess change behind me each week. But we've been doing it, and we are very close to getting our certificate of occupancy. I have brand new 13-year-old twins, boy-girl twins, and I'm a mom. I'm a wife to my husband, Ryan, and I get to help people re-examine their relationship with alcohol, and I just love what I do here with No More Wasted Days. So nice to meet you if you're listening and you're new.
Yeah. Welcome, everybody.
Yeah. And beyond all of that, Heather mentioned that she does online coaching. So if you're ever interested in doing one-on-one coaching with her, be sure to check out our show notes and just see what that is all about. Heather, do you want to give a quick what happens when you do one-on-one coaching and how it can really be catered to anyone?
Yeah. So we would meet via Zoom or phone. And I like to determine if we're a good fit. I think that's really important. And I have a variety of membership options, and I'd love to connect and help you gain joy and freedom without booze.
That's awesome. And beyond that, both of us work in a group coaching setting called the Daymakers. We have the Daymakers membership available to you at any point. It's an online membership, and it allows you to really have that almost one-on-one coaching feel, but also with a group of peers going through it all at the same time. We're a group of people from all different walks of life, a variety of ages, and the commonality is that everyone is trying to change their relationship with alcohol in a positive way. So even if you're sober curious, this is something that might be great for you, and you can try it out for 1 week for a $7 trial. So if you're like, this sounds like something that I'm curious about, then do that 1 week trial and just see. You get to do group coaching with Heather and I, where we bring certain topics to you, kind of like the topics we bring on the podcast, but then you get to sit and chat with us after we talk about it, which I think is where the magic really happens. And those group coaching sessions are just the most amazing part. So, and we have some new and exciting things happening in the Daymakers community too, that we'll talk about just a little bit later in the episode, but we want to get into this topic. So Heather, thinking about labeling yourself when you first quit drinking, was that super overwhelming? Because, man, it is a reason I didn't quit for a long time.
Yeah. I mean, the word alcoholic has so much stigma attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
I carried a lot of like disdain, if I'm being honest,
yeah,
with that word. And I did not want to refer to myself as an alcoholic.
Yeah, that was a huge thing for me. Like I, for whatever reason, I was like, I do not want to be an alcoholic, which is now being much farther into my journey. I'm like, I could care less what people, I'm like, you can call me anything, just don't call me a drunk. That's the only one that really grates on my nerves now. But otherwise, I'm like, whatever the term, I'm going to take it and embrace it and show people that there shouldn't be a stigma attached to it. But when I was brand new, I was, oh my gosh, I was just like, I am not an alcoholic. It was a big reason I didn't want to go to AA because I thought you had to stand up at a meeting and say, hi, I'm Sarah and I'm an alcoholic. And I was like, there's no way I can say that. I just cannot say that. I know Heather always likes to do this, so I'm taking cue from her. And I Googled this and I looked on the website of the National Institute of Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism. And when I started looking at it, I started finding out that the word alcoholic is actually a really outdated term. So I'm looking at this word and I'm finding out that, oh my gosh, it's actually met with a lot of stereotypes and stigmas. So they have actually changed it. And as I dug deeper, I was led to an article by Very Well Mind that states that alcoholic is an outdated term. And now they use the phrase alcohol use disorder, or you may hear it referred to as AUD. And this is defined as a medical condition characterized by impaired ability to stop or control alcohol use despite adverse social, occupational, or health consequences. It encompasses the conditions that some people refer to as alcohol abuse, alcohol dependence, alcohol addiction, and the colloquial term alcoholism. So I just was blown away when I was like, oh, the term alcoholic is being phased out. And I have heard this from people on comment sections in my reels and TikToks, but I always like to dig in there. And then Heather's going to go into even more detail on the term alcoholic for us.
So the term alcoholic was coined in 1849 by a Swedish medical doctor. The American Medical Association first classified alcoholism as a disease in 1956. And in 1987, addiction was classified as a disease as well. I personally, like I said earlier, did not like the term alcoholic at first. And now, like you, Sarah, I've just embraced it. I use it interchangeably. And if people want to say, like, Heather, you were or are an alcoholic, that's fine.
Right. You can call me what you want.
Yeah. I prefer alcohol use disorder or substance use disorder.
Yeah, I really like the substance use disorder when I found that as well, because I was even turned off by like disorder. I'm like, well, is it really a disorder? You know, all these things float into my brain. But I was like, I like that it can just be AUD, SUD. And if people are in the know, it's like you're in a little secret club. Like we've got our own little acronym that we can use and be like, oh yeah, I got your number. I know who you are. And now we're in the cool club together. So if you're thinking, what increases my risks for AUD? One of the things that really turned me off to the term alcoholic is that when I would search it, I could find any way to say, I wasn't that. Nope, that's not me. That doesn't define me either. But let's really dive into what increases the risk first, and then we'll go into a little questionnaire you can do on yourself to just see if you have these symptoms. So first, what increases your risk for AUD? Drinking at an early age. A recent national survey found that among people ages 26 and older, those who began drinking before age 15 were more than three times as likely to report having AUD in the past year as those who waited until the age of 21 or later to begin drinking. The risk for females in this group is higher than that of males. So that is something to take note to if you are a female. Were you an early drinker, Heather?
Oh, yeah.
I was not. I did not drink very much in high school. So this is one of those things that I would have read this and gone, that's not me. I started drinking more in my 20s. Not that I didn't drink in my teens, but.
Yeah, I definitely, like, I think I had my first drink when I was like 12. And I didn't drink much in high school. I didn't drink that much in college. It was after.
That's kind of how I was. Like, I would have I'd get to taste a drink at Thanksgiving dinner or maybe have a glass of wine when I was a teenager at Thanksgiving dinner. But I really was not a person who was going out in my high school years and getting drunk. So I was smoking weed in my high school years. So, you know, I was doing other things. But then now when I look at that, I go, oh, well, maybe that would have been an indicator for me instead, looking at a substance use disorder. The next thing is genetics and family history of alcohol problems. Genetics play a role, accounting for approximately 60%. However, like other chronic health conditions, AUD risk is influenced by the interplay between a person's genes and their environment. I think that's so important to remember because although when I look back on my whole family history, I know that there is alcohol use disorder there, but I would always look at it and go, but it wasn't my parents, because my parents really did not drink all that much in front of me. My dad did, but I never saw him drunk until I was probably in college. So it's just kind of one of those things. And my mom just doesn't drink. It's just not her thing. She still doesn't. She just is like not into it. But I think now I can see, oh, this is something that maybe I need to worry about even as I'm in the bigger scope of my family and we would do Thanksgiving celebrations and what did it look like within our family as having alcohol around as a celebrating thing. So how about you for, if you don't mind talking about genetics and family history?
No, I don't mind at all. I have on one side of my family has a pretty strong alcohol use disorder history.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, a lot. And yeah. I think like when it comes to your environment, so many people who were raised by folks who have issues with alcohol and other drugs, I think have like trauma related to that, which leads them to drink.
Yes, exactly. And if you guys want to know more about trauma, be sure to go back and listen to our episode all about trauma so you can really learn what that is. The last thing on what may increase your risk for AUD is mental health conditions and history of trauma, which we just led into perfectly. A wide range of psychiatric conditions, including depression, post-traumatic stress disorder, and attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, otherwise known as ADHD, are comorbid with AUD and are associated with an increased risk of AUD. People with a history of childhood trauma are also vulnerable to AUD. So these are just things to be on the lookout as you're starting to examine yourself and your past drinking patterns. Is this something that I'm susceptible to? If so, it may be something that I need to start looking at. I know when we talk in the Daymakers community, we talk a lot about ADHD and how a lot of us feel like, oh, we are either on that spectrum or are diagnosed and had no idea how much it affected ourselves as drinkers.
Yeah. I mean, I was diagnosed with ADHD in my 20s, and then again, twice in my 40s. And I see it now. I've done a lot more research. I've talked with my therapist about it, learned a lot more about it. And as far as the other potential causes like genetics, environment, mental health conditions, like no wonder folks develop problems with alcohol.
Right? It's such an easy thing to turn to because it's accepted and it really does work at numbing you out, at just chilling your brain out. And for our people that struggle with ADHD, you're usually searching for that constant dopamine. You just want dopamine, dopamine, dopamine. And it is an easy way to get it, and along with other drugs, but alcohol is just the most readily available to all of us, even before we're 21, right? Like, let's be real. It's easy to get your hands on. So when I was really struggling with the, am I an alcoholic? Do I need to quit drinking? Because this was a constant question in my mind for probably like 3 years before I quit drinking. It's just this ongoing reel. And I would Google, am I an alcoholic? How do I know if I'm an alcoholic? Now, I would like to talk to the people at Google. I don't have an in with them, but I would really like to talk to them and talk them into saying, oh, if you just search this, you probably are. Like, oh, this is a red flag.
Like a big X could pop up on your screen. Like,
exactly. That is what needs to happen. But so if you are sitting here and you're like, oh, shit, I've been Googling that. Don't worry. You're not alone. I was Googling it. And I was reading all these questions and finding all the reasons I didn't fit the bill. So we're going to go through these and we'll just do a quick little like, was this you? Was it not? So the first one is you had times when you ended up drinking more or longer than you intended. Oh, I totally hit that one. How about you?
Oh, yeah.
Every day. Every day at the end, that was me. Now, if I would have read that when I was drinking, I'd go, well, yeah, I mean, sometimes, but everybody does that. I was really big on answering the questions that way, but everybody does that. Next one is, more than once you've wanted to cut down or stop drinking or try to, but you couldn't.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
And I say like more than once, it definitely happened more than once for me until it finally stuck. So if you are stuck saying, well, I do keep trying and I keep failing, you're not failing if you keep trying. So just keep showing up. And one of the times listening to podcasts like this, filling your mind with Quitlet is going to finally make it all click at some point. So the next one is spent a lot of time drinking, being sick from drinking, or getting over other after effects. And that was so me. My hangovers were kind of the driving force for me to want to quit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Me too.
The next one is wanted to drink so badly you couldn't think of anything else. Now, drinking me would have said, that never happened. But when I quit, I started seeing patterns of I wouldn't go somewhere if I knew there wasn't going to be alcohol. If we were somewhere where there wasn't alcohol, I wanted to leave.
Same. Oh, yeah.
And then found that drinking or being sick from drinking often interfered with taking care of your home or family, caused job troubles or school problems. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Me and Heather just nodding our heads here. Now, again, when I was a drinker, I would have said, no, I'm doing great at all those things. Because I would say, no, I'm doing great at my job. I'm taking care of my family. My house was a disaster. It's just kind of like, come on now. Continued to drink even though it was causing trouble with family or friends.
Oh, yeah.
That one, I feel like I could easily say no. But now that I look at it, honestly, I can see. No, there were instances for sure. Given up or cut back on activities you found important, interesting, or pleasurable so you could drink.
Oh,
yep. Yeah. Yep. Became my only hobby. More than once gotten into situations while or after drinking that increased your chances of getting hurt, such as driving, swimming, using machinery, walking in a dangerous area, or unsafe sexual behavior. Yeah.
It's amazing. I'm still alive for many reasons.
There are things that I think about that I did in college. There are things that I think about that I did like as an adult, but me and Ryan would be on a vacation and just decide to walk home in New Orleans where we don't know where the unsafe neighborhoods are, but we're just drunk and going on our way, waking up the next day going, oh my God, we're such idiots. Like I definitely had a guardian angel a few of the times there. The next one is continued to drink even though it was making you feel depressed or anxious, adding to another health problem, or after having an alcohol-related blackout. Yeah. I just like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I would read these as a drinker and be like, no. And now I look at them, I'm like, oh geez. Okay, we've got two more here. So had to drink much more than you once did to get the effect you wanted, or found that your usual number of drinks had had much less effect than before.
Yep, that good old tolerance.
I know. And that was one that I didn't see until I quit. And it was kind of eye-opening for me to go, oh, if it's taking this many drinks, oh man, I don't want to see how many drinks it's going to take when I'm 80. I don't want to find that out. So, and then the last one is found that when the effects of alcohol were wearing off, you had withdrawal symptoms such as trouble sleeping, shakiness, restlessness, nausea, sweating, a racing heart, dysphoria, malaise, feeling low, or even a seizure, or even sense that things were happening that weren't really there.
Yeah, I think every single one of those applies to me except a seizure.
Yep. Me too. But at first I was like, oh, not dysphoria, but then it says feeling uneasy or unhappy every time after I had quit drink, after I had drank the night before. I thought it was just a hangover. I never realized that a hangover was withdrawals until I quit. And I was like, yeah. Oh my gosh, how
That's
scary.
That's a big one. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll let you go into the DSM-5.
All right. So y'all know, if you've been listening a while, I love to define things. So the DSM-5, that's the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. It's what I have used as my career Bible for over 20 years. So the DSM defines alcohol use as a maladaptive pattern of substance use leading to a clinically significant impairment, consuming the substance in larger amounts and for longer times than intended. And then kind of like what we said earlier about alcohol use disorder, it's very similar. Persistent desire to cut down or regulate use, unsuccessful attempts to stop in the past.
I love the definitions and just getting really real with yourself, because I think that's what a lot of it is that we are so afraid of all these terms, and we will look them up and say, oh, I'm just not going to fit this term. This isn't for me. But when you get really honest with yourself and just start going, okay, do I have any of these? And I believe it's stated that when you go through that list of questions that we went through, even if you answer one as a yes, then it's something to look at where you are on the alcohol use disorder spectrum. So if you were going through that and you were kind of going, no, 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 yes, yes, you know, that's something to start looking at. And I'm not going to say, oh, that means you have this or you're this, but it's just something to start evaluating in yourself. So the next thing we're going to do is just explore other terms, because I needed this when I was brand new. I didn't want to be an alcoholic. I didn't want to have alcohol use disorder, even though I didn't find out about that one much later into my journey. And I didn't even want to be some of these terms that we're going to go through. So this is going to be a quick little, here are four different things that you may identify with and you may enjoy these terms better. So the first one is sober. Oh my God, I didn't want to be sober in quotation marks when I first quit. And now I walk around being like, I am in my sober girl era. I am sober AF. But I hated that term when I started. So when you look it up in the Merriam-Webster dictionary, it's defined as abstaining from drinking alcohol or taking intoxicating drugs, refraining from the use of addictive substances. Very straightforward. How do you feel about the word sober?
I love it. I also have a Yeti that one of the day makers engraved in my sober era for me. I think it was for 1,000 days. I like to think about the word sober as free from. So you could be free from alcohol, marijuana, coffee, lying. I mean, you could be sober in so many different areas.
Yeah. It took me a while to be comfortable with the term, but I am so comfortable with it now. I wouldn't even use it as a hashtag in my things, because I wanted to be the second term. This is what I really resonated with and still do. This is still the one that I resonate with the most. Alcohol free, which is focusing on the choice to live without alcohol rather than a label associated with addiction. I just loved this. So I just find this term to be the one that really defines how I felt in the beginning, because I couldn't quite figure out like what it was, but I felt free. I finally felt free. So this is the one that I just loved. And I also used this term in the beginning because I was still using marijuana from time to time when I first quit. And I felt that sober wasn't an accurate description because of that. So I felt like alcohol free was a much more appropriate term for me. And we'll go into another term where if you are still using marijuana, THC products, we can have a different term for that, even if you feel like it resonates with you. How about you on alcohol free?
I use sober and alcohol free interchangeably.
Yeah, I do now too. But I definitely love this one. I think I heard Annie Grace say it first and I was like, gosh, I love that term. That makes this a lot less scary. So the third one is in recovery. And this means emphasizing that recovery is a personal journey and doesn't always imply a lifelong struggle with alcohol. And I really liked that part because I do hear a lot of people say I'm in recovery. And I feel like that means like I am doing the work right now. And I know that I at one point will be free from this and I won't be in recovery anymore. It's not a term I used, but I have heard a lot of people use it.
Yeah, I use it. I'll say in recovery from breast cancer treatment, alcohol, trauma, Sour Patch Kids. Just kidding. Well, not really.
I mean, it really is like, I feel like when you start looking at it that way, even when you say in recovery from breast cancer, it's like, oh, okay. It really is just saying, I know that this is happening right now and I'm working on it and I'm embracing it. So I like that one. I just don't really use it for myself very often, but I really, when people do say it, I'm always like, oh, I like that. The last one is Cali Sober. I wanted to bring this one up because I do get questions about this on TikTok and Instagram and people want to know my opinions and all these things. And it's just kind of like, okay, well, let's really define what it says. In an article by Very Well Mind, California Sober is where someone is in recovery and they abstain from so-called hard drugs like cocaine and heroin, but continue to use other substances, most commonly marijuana and alcohol. So this one is saying, oh, these people still drink and use THC products or marijuana, but This way, they're staying clean from cocaine and heroin. It is a form of harm reduction. Proponents see it as a form of harm reduction, which is a good thing. And other people who oppose this view it as precipice of a slippery slope. It is also defined often as people who abstain from alcohol, but use marijuana only. So for me, this worked until it didn't. This was something that was working for me. It would make Friday nights seem fun and would make doing boring chores days go a little faster. It was kind of replacing alcohol in what I felt was a safer thing because I was not getting the hangovers, which is the thing I was just trying to get away from. But all of a sudden, I could see the same patterns in myself that I saw with alcohol. I could see that I was constantly thinking about it. It was becoming a daily habit. It was no longer this thing that was just a small replacement. And I didn't like that. I didn't like how it felt. I was starting to feel the guilt over it again. I was starting to feel like I was hiding it. And it was just kind of like, this is not working. If you use this as a method and it works for you, I think that that is great. I will not personally tell people like, hey, if you're trying to quit drinking, a really good way to do it is to consume THC products. And the reason I will not do this is because one, you can get yourself caught in that same pattern like I was caught in. And the research is still very limited on the effects of marijuana on our brains, on our emotional health, on a lot of things. It is a very limited researched thing. And then it's just not legal everywhere yet. I think a lot of us live in states where it is legal and we're like, oh my gosh, it's just everywhere and there's dispensaries. That's not how it is. So I'm always like, do what you're going to do with that term. If this works for you and it makes quitting drinking work, I think that it can be an option. Do you have opinions on this?
I think, you know, do what you need to do and try to, in terms of transfer addiction, if you quit drinking and your marijuana use really increases, just pay attention.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, when I talk to my clients, they ask me the same question. You know, only the individual can really know what's working for them and what's not. I know that CBD helps some folks, you know, with anxiety and mood and, you know, there's gummies and drinks and all kinds of stuff. So I think it's individual to the person and their experience and like maybe not wanting to quit too much at one time.
Exactly. And I will tell people like I'm Cali sober friendly. If you're in the community and you're Cali sober, I applaud you for being there and quitting drinking because I think quitting drinking is really hard. But I agree with everything Heather said. It's just something to watch. It's something to be aware of. It is still a substance. I know I have friends who will go, oh, no, it's medicine. And I'm like, well, so I have opinions, but I also just I want people to feel free to explore that option if they feel like it's a good fit for them.
Yeah, there's so much like I hear about like the synthetic ingredients in THC these days. Mm-hmm. Like when you get at a store, wherever it's legal, however that works. I hear a lot about that. And when I first quit drinking, I went by one of those legal stores and got like a gummy. And the lady and I at the checkout were not speaking the same language.
Yeah.
I ate half of it and I was fine. And then I was not. And I thought the neighbors could hear my thoughts.
Yeah, man, I know.
So it's just like, I'm good.
This is not what I was looking for.
No.
That's how I always am. I'm like,
I couldn't come out of my bedroom. I was crazy about.
And it's like people have a tolerance to it, just like alcohol. So when somebody's saying like, oh, take one of these, and it's like, I'll start with half. And then you're like, holy shit. It is just like, it's just something to think about there.
So before we move on to the next part of But Am I an Alcoholic, we are doing a book club in the Daymakers community, and I'm so excited about it. We're reading Beyond Sober. So I want to invite y'all to come check out the Daymakers and the book club and come see me and Sarah.
Yeah, I think the book club's a pretty fun new addition, and I think it just gives everybody else a little more motivation. And man, books about quitting drinking, which people call Quitlet. I love that there's little names for everything. They got me through a lot of hard times in the beginning.
Me too.
Being able to listen to them on Audible, I was like, oh my gosh, I need this. I need people telling their story in my ear constantly so I know I'm going to make it. So come join us. And we're hoping to start doing a new book every single month. I'm the slowest reader in the room, I can tell from everybody's comments. So if you're kind of like, oh no, book clubs scare me because I'm a slow reader, don't worry, you can join me. And when I can, I will be listening to the book. I find no shame in that. So check out the link in the show notes to learn all about Daymakers. And let's keep going on this, because now you know all these terms. You know about an alcoholic. You know about AUD. You know about sober and recovery, Cali sober, all those things. So how are you going to identify yourself? This is where the empowerment comes in. It is all up to you. You just need to make this decision for you. And it does not matter what you call yourself, okay? You're going to get to figure this out, whatever makes you feel powerful on your journey. But here are some things to just look at when you're really trying to figure it out. What are your personal reasons for quitting drinking? Reflect on your own motivations for quitting alcohol. Maybe it's health, relationships, personal growth, or spirituality. For me, it was just that life was so much easier without alcohol, and I felt so dang good. And I just knew I couldn't go back. I was a better parent. I am a better parent without it. I'm a better wife. I'm a better friend. And I like myself better without it. That was a huge thing for me.
I think it's really key to get very specific about your personal reasons and your why.
Yes. And the why really is when you think about when you've got a craving, what are you going to think about? What's going to get you through that craving? Why are you doing this? And for me, I honestly tell myself, I like myself better in the morning when I wake up and I didn't drink the night before. And it's always true. And when I think about that, I go, okay, yeah. It's the same when I quit smoking weed. I had to be like, I like myself better when I wake up in the morning and I know I made this choice for myself. So it is just finding that why and really getting in touch with it. And then other thing, as I have progressed on my journey, I can see that I definitely fell into the alcohol use disorder spectrum. And it's something that I didn't see in the beginning. So if you're listening to this, you're like, I listened to the whole first half of this podcast and I just don't feel like I'm in that alcohol use disorder spectrum. I'm not an alcoholic. That's okay. You might change as you go. And we'll talk about that a little bit more. But now I can see I never stopped at one. Hangovers just ruined my days. Hangovers ruined my weekends. Hangovers were only cured by drinking more or finally getting through one day of terrible withdrawals and then being like, okay, I'm back on board to the straight and narrow life for, 8 hours until I drink again. I know I fell into it, but it took me a little while.
Yeah. I mean, it's a process for sure.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. And I think when you start to learn more about alcohol and learn who you are without it, and embrace the definition that you have given yourself, there's so much freedom and power in that.
Yeah. And that's actually what we were going to talk about next, is embracing those personal definitions. So use what you've learned today as you've listened to the podcast and decide how you will define your alcohol-free journey on your own terms. And I know I've said a number of times, like, you don't have to pick a term at all, but I think it's important to have something that you call yourself that does make you feel powerful. And like I was saying, I say, I'm sober AF. I'm alcohol free. I'm in my sober girl era. Those things make me feel excited about being alcohol free. So if you don't feel excited when you think those things, those aren't your terms. And that's okay. If others ask casually, I say, I don't drink. I keep it simple. But knowing those terms in my brain, oh, they make me feel like a badass.
Same.
Yeah. Like, I want shirts that say sober AF, sober girl. I'm finally at that point on my journey. I wonder if that goes away. Like, that's a 5-year thing.
Yeah. I have some that say like normalize sobriety, celebrate recovery.
Yeah.
We'll have to make us some more.
I know. I'm going on Amazon and Etsy every now and then. I asked for them for Christmas. My family didn't get the memo, even though I'm pretty pushy with what I want for gifts. I'm walking around being like, and there's this Sober Girl era shirt. I really like it. Here's the link.
Mm-hmm. I did the same thing.
I got some other good stuff, so I can't complain. So the last thing we're going to talk about is like, how do you communicate this with others? Because that is overwhelming. You're really worried in the beginning, or at least I was. I was really worried in the beginning that when I would say, oh, I haven't been drinking for a while, that people would turn, like shine the spotlight on me and be like, is it because you're an alcoholic? I just have to tell you, no one's ever done that. Just so you know, no one has done that to me yet.
Yeah, people have to be, but I swear I invite like very bizarre questions throughout my entire life. Somebody was like, oh yeah, like my stepfather was an alcoholic. And after I had just said like, I don't drink.
Right. And you're like, did I even go into that much detail on it? But let's just address this and kind of say, how are you going to deal with this? Because other people have misconceptions and their own ideas of what alcoholism looks like, what AUD looks like. And other people don't know as much as you, because here's the big thing. We know the most. Those of us that are living it right now, we've done the research. We're finding this out for us, and other people don't know. So you can just kind of handle the questions or skepticism from your friends, family, or colleagues by kind of knowing that maybe they just don't know as much as you. And it's okay to take a pause and give them a quick little education and just say, actually, there's a term called alcohol use disorder now, and we call it AUD, and I prefer to use that. If you feel comfortable saying that, that's awesome. But if other people are trying to label you, try not to take offense to that. Only you know why this is important to you, and you just need to have this basic understanding of all these other terms. So when people are saying them and it makes you feel that ick inside that everybody talks about, it's like, if you feel that, at least now you know things, so you can kindly tell the person, actually, that's not what I prefer to use because that term means this. Or, you know, just go about it that way and stay matter of fact. And remember that people are curious, and just meet people where they're at and also understand where you're at. So how do you handle when somebody does say, oh yeah, my stepdad was an alcoholic? Did you say anything to that, or were you just kind of shocked in the moment?
No, it takes a lot to shock me. I think I was just like, oh yeah. And I'll just keep it moving. And if people are like, so were you an alcoholic, or does that mean you can never drink again? I'm like, I don't plan to drink again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't see the point in just one. It seems very counterintuitive to me. So
yeah, like maybe one doesn't work. I don't know. I make that joke with people. I'm like, why would I have one that like doesn't even do anything?
Yeah. And a good way to practice to it's like, say you have a colleague that you don't talk to very much. Mm-hmm. You run into them in the hall, just like, what'd you do this weekend? Like, oh, I don't drink, so I da 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 da. Or just like kind of incorporate it with your hairdresser or your nail tech.
Yes.
It's a way to try it on.
Yeah. I've heard people saying that they told the barista, like, I ordered coffee and I told them I didn't drink this weekend. Like, just as this, like, yay, like I had to tell somebody. So find somebody, and even if it feels awkward, it might feel really freeing when you do it, and then you'll find out it's not that bad. I get the question a lot, like, so you're never drinking again? And in the beginning, I was like, no, I'm never drinking again. Like, I got pretty serious about it, like after 150 days. For a while, I was like, I'm taking a break. I'll see where it goes. And then I felt like, no, I'm never drinking again. And now I tell people, like, I think at least till I'm 80. Like, I've always got that one in my back pocket, and it's just kind of the, well, I know I'm not drinking today. So it's just know your path as much as you can. And then just go ahead.
Yeah. Like in most communication, I always recommend folks keep it honest, simple. When you're communicating, you do not need to justify or defend your choices.
Mm-hmm.
Just, is it true? Is it kind? Is it necessary?
I have to remember that. I'm like repeating it in my head right now. And then just know where you're going to draw the line on discussing your past drinking with others. And know where you'll draw the line if you're having to convince someone that either you did have a drinking problem or that it's important to you that you're not drinking. Just have those boundaries in place for yourself, because sometimes emotions will get fueled with all of this stuff. So just remember, like, now when I start going into too many questions about my drinking past with somebody I'm not comfortable with, I need to know to just use Heather's technique of keeping it honest and simple and kind, and just close down the conversation. So
yeah,
I hope this was really helpful for all of you. What I really want you to remember is this journey is super fluid and it will change. You may call yourself alcohol-free one day and then sober feels right the next day, and that's okay. And you may think one form of recovery won't work for you in the beginning, and then later it totally makes sense for you. So I know I share a lot about how I did not want to do AA in the beginning. And that was really because of lack of judgment. Big ego was in play for sure. Being scared. Like, there were a lot of things. But never write something off, because later on you might be like, that's a path for me. And it's okay, because what's important to you right now is the most important piece. And I know that's kind of redundant the way I said it, but how you feel is the most important today on the journey. And that's all that matters.
Yeah. Thank y'all for listening. Make sure you check out the links in the show notes for the Daymakers community, one-on-one coaching with me, and our social media.
Yeah. And be sure to hit the follow button from whatever app you're listening to and go hit those stars. Super simple to do. And it is the best way to support our podcast, and it's totally free.
Yeah. Thanks, y'all. Bye, y'all.